We, the jury, in the above entitled action, find the defendant Orenthal James Simpson not guilty of the crime of murder in violation of Penal Code Section 187A, a felony upon Nicole Brown Simpson. We, the jury, in the above entitled action, find the defendant Orenthal James Simpson not guilty of the crime of murder in violation of Penal Code Section 187A, a felony upon Ronald Lyle Goldman.
That was October 3rd, 1995. Not guilty in the murder of Nicole Brown Simpson. Not guilty in the murder of Ronald Goldman. And I'll tell you, I was thinking yesterday, like, what are those sort of 10 moments that you just could never forget where you are? I mean, I think we start and end in a way with 9/11. I don't think there's any question about that. I was on the air doing a show at 9 o'clock, 9 to noon show with a partner. And obviously, the plane hit the first tower probably around 8:30, and just after we got started, the second plane hit, and you're like, this is not an accident, this is a terror attack, and then you're swamped. People, and I'm looking for my sister, by the way, who worked near the Empire State Building in New York City at the time. She's 3 years younger than me, and she's in Rochester now in upstate New York, but we couldn't find her, you can imagine. And then you look at the map, and you realize the Empire State Building's nowhere near the World Trade Center. She was under the subway, came up from the subway at that exact time the second plane hit, and she just sees gray and black in the sky. But I bring that up to note, of the top 10 that I could come up with, and I think most people would, OJ's involved in two of those. The Bronco chase alone in 1994 in June is on that Friday afternoon is definitely a where were you moment. And then the verdict itself that we just played you, October 3rd, 1995. I'm starting first year of journalism school. I did my politics BA, got done, took a year off. And then I'm in journalism school, and we're in a room watching the verdict on a small television. And one girl in my class cheered when he was found not guilty. And that started bit of an argument, and so you couldn't hear the rest of television, and it was just, that was what was happening. We all remember where we were for that particular verdict. Rather remarkable. Dr. Frankie Bailey, a criminal justice professor at the University at Albany, SUNY, a part of the State University of New York, who studies crime history, crime and mass media, popular culture, and she's an author as well. It's great to have you on. Thanks very much for the time.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me.
I lay all that out there, and you probably have that same recollection, very distinct memories of what happened in 94 and 95, Frankie.
Yeah, I was at home watching the television. I knew what time the verdict was likely. Well, I didn't really know because it came back faster than I expected, but I knew when it came I wanted to be at home. And so I was staying around watching, waiting.
What do you think the verdict has influenced in our current culture? What can we spot? We didn't have social media then. I don't know. Sometimes I think the media tells us how polarized we are, and I'm like, I don't know. Is that an online thing? When 20 of us get together in a room, it's not like we're shouting and arguing and throwing stuff at each other. But what do you think it's influenced almost 30 years later about who we are now?
I think it influenced the coverage of more crime cases. There's so many television shows, so many podcasts, so many attempts to get to the background, what happened in the cases that people want to watch and talk about. And I think that was, not the beginning, but the realization on the part of media that they could bring in an audience if they covered those types of cases.
So I wrote an essay in what would have been my third year of poli-sci, and I wrote it on the Rodney King verdict and the subsequent reaction. The Rodney King verdict and our reaction to that, I don't think you can talk about the O.J. Simpson trial and verdict without referencing that. Both things happened in California. Both things had obviously some racial tension. Tell our audience about that and where you think the linkages might be. Or is that a little bit overplayed? Give me your thoughts.
No, I don't think so. I think that O.J. was unique in the sense that you have this very wealthy African-American man, and it's focusing on him, but Rodney King presents the other side of criminal justice, the part of this not very wealthy man and engage in something that people might expect of predict that a black American man and the, would be engaged in when he's confronting or involved with the police, where O.J. for a while at least was able to rise above this, to be a black man who had some social recognition, who the police would not be beating, they're opposite sides of the coin in terms of how they're able to engage with the criminal justice system, until O.J. begins to lose that protection that he had as a black man who was very famous.
Yeah. I think, and just to remind our audience, Rodney King, this was March 3rd, 1991. He was severely beaten by LAPD officers. There were trials for all four officers. They were all acquitted. But I would make the case, Frankie, we probably don't even, that doesn't even get to trial if somebody doesn't videotape that particular incident on the highway. And this is way before anybody was, carrying around a phone in their pocket 24/7 and probably videotaping everything. So it really changed. It changed the culture in that we really needed evidence. Many, many people in the black community had said for years, this is what the police are to African-Americans, and especially this particular police department. And then that video came out and he said, see, we've been telling you this for decades and you didn't believe us.
Yeah, there are some things that are best seen, are not for the victim, but better seen if you're going to understand what's going on and how these interactions play out.
Give me your sense as well. Like this was surprising to us yesterday because we didn't know he was sick. But if I said to you, we played that clip for you, October 3rd, 1995, he gets acquitted. We just couldn't predict how shunned he would be, how much of almost a recluse he would be. And then we sure couldn't predict he'd get arrested and spend a long period of time in jail later for some bizarre, kidnapping hostage thing involving sports memorabilia. Like, you couldn't write this stuff in a Hollywood script, ironically.
No. I mean, that's the thing, that much of what happened was like a Hollywood script in terms of things that you wouldn't expect to happen and the way they happen, beginning with the deaths of the two people who were killed. I mean, that is not something that you would predict or expect.
Not in the least. It was so bizarre. Frankie Bailey's professor of criminal justice, University at Albany, State University of New York. It's a pleasure having you on this morning, and I really appreciate you getting up early. Thanks for this. Have a great day and a great weekend.
Oh, thank you. You too.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone, like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.